honestly, this was a, I do want to at least say that this is something that I was compelled to write about, because there was a period, I think it was actually during Tabernacles, where, I don't know, I mean, something occurred in my mind, and I was thinking about something, and this popped up, this topic, how Joshua and Moses were very similar. And I forgot, Elder John long ago gave me some advice to, when you have a thought, write it down in the moment. I didn't have any paper or a pen with me at the time, so I didn't write it down. But when Elder David a couple weeks ago had asked me to prepare another message, I thinking about what I was going to prepare, this immediately came back to my mind. And I was starting to think, well, maybe there's something else, but it was really being pushed in my mind, like Yahweh really wanted me to give this, and I think I can understand why. A lot of people don't understand the correlation between these two. They talk about how Yeshua is the Messiah, but they don't consider that he's also the prophet that is like Moses. So that's why, since Yahweh compelled this, I'm going to do this message. Many people have read in their Bibles and know that Yahshua is the prophet like Moses. And some don't know that. But most theologians, even in modern-day Christianity or Christianity, would admit they know that Yahshua is the prophet like unto Moses. But they don't usually look further than that. They don't look what it means. They don't understand why Yahshua is the prophet like Moses. And so, hopefully in this message, you'll see a lot of the parallels between Moses and Yahshua, because he really is the prophet like Moses. There's a lot of things they had in common. In Deuteronomy, Yahweh promised he would send a prophet like Moses to Israel. If you open up to Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15 through 19, again, that's Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15 through 19. I was going to put these all up on the projector, but lost the original copy of my thing on the computer, so I couldn't get all the stuff transferred over, so I'm just going to read it all. Yahweh, it says in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15 through 19, Yahweh your Elohim will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your countrymen. To him you shall listen. I'm going to go ahead and pause here and say that the word listen here is also what has been translated as Shema. So it's the same one we read in Deuteronomy 6:4 where it says, Hear, O Israel, Yahweh Elohim, Yahweh is Echad, or Yahweh is one. It's Shema Yisrael. It's the same word, Shema, which means to hear diligently, to not only to hear, but to put that hearing into practice. It's not a hearing where you hear it, but it's something you hear and also do. So it says, where was I? Hold on, I'm just going to start right over. It says, okay, I'm going to start back over. Yahweh Elohim will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your countrymen. To him you shall listen. I think that's the same word. But this is in accordance with everything that you asked of Yahweh your Elohim at Horeb on the day of assembly, saying, Do not let me hear the voice. I think I was wrong. Listen is not the same as Shema, my bad. But the voice of Yahweh, my Elohim, again, and do not let me see this great fire anymore, or I will die. And Yahweh said to me, They have spoken well. I will raise up for them a prophet among their countrymen like you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them everything I command him. And it shall come about that whoever does not listen to my words, which he speaks in my name, I myself will require it of him. So, just to sum this up, Yahweh said we have to listen to this prophet. I want to clarify that first and foremost, because I'm going to sum this up again at the end, because his name is in this person. He's going to also speak in the name of Yahweh, so he speaks with the same authority as Yahweh would have, since Yahweh has delegated that authority to him. That's basically what has been said here. Kind of like a signet ring has been given to a person or an ambassador that the king sends out. He has that same stamp of authority. Most people who have read the scriptures know that this prophet like unto Moses that this is Yahshua, but that's as far into it as they understand. Why is Yahshua called the prophet like Moses? What did they have in common? The truth is they had far more in common than people realize. And I'm going to be totally honest, I cannot get everything that they're parallel with each other in this message. There's way too many. Yahshua and Moses were both born in a hostile time for Yahweh's people. Moses during the barbaric Egyptian pharaoh's rule and Yahshua during the Roman occupation of Judea. During both of these rules, a king feared something and as a result of these fears killed many children or babies of Israel. Moses and Yahshua were both in danger of being murdered as infants. In Exodus chapter 1, verse 22, if you guys want to open up there. Again, that's Exodus chapter 1, verse 22. Oh, wait a second. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born, you are to throw into the Nile, but every daughter you are to keep alive. Also, this goes well, this is parallel with the next verse, Exodus chapter 2, verse 1 through 3. That's Exodus chapter 2, verse 1 through 3, if anyone needs to turn there. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and gave birth to a son, and when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she got him a papyrus basket and covered it with tar and pitch. Then she put the child in it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. This, to sum this up, this was Moses, of course, as a baby. And Pharaoh feared a mass uprising of the people of Israel because they were populating incredibly quickly. So he feared an uprising. So to deal with this, he basically ordered the mass genocide of male children of Israel. Of course, Yahweh, through his mercy, spared Moses, having obviously a plan beforehand ordained for him. Pharaoh killed many Israelite children, but Yahweh protected Moses. Yahshua also was in danger as a child from the wrath of Herod the Great. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 13 through 16, again, that's Matthew 2, 13 through 16, just verifying. Now when they had gone, behold, a Malachim, or angel of Yahweh, appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Mitzrayim or Egypt, and stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. He stayed there until the death of Herod. This happened so that what had been spoken by Yahweh through the prophet would be fulfilled. Out of Egypt I called my son. Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent men and killed all the boys who were in Bethlehem and in all its vicinity who were 2 years old or under, according to the time which had been determined from the Magi. As we can see, both Moses and Yahshua were in danger as infants, but Yahweh saved them both. And also, both Moses and Yahshua also came out of Egypt. Now, before I get into that point, I also want to, since we're on the topic of Yahshua being attacked by Herod, you got a lot of people who think that Yahshua had just been born at this time, that he was, this since we're getting to that time of year, I'm going to go ahead and bring this up. It says right here that why would Herod, here's a quick rhetorical question, why would Herod try to kill all those 2 years or younger if Yahshua was just a newborn at this time? Obviously, the Magi did not go and see a newborn child. It had been a while since he had been born. So this idea that the Magi had just three wise men thing, there's never says just three. You know, three gifts are mentioned, but not just three Magi. I just wanted to bring that up. So that's a tradition that people have for the Christmas time, which is, we're coming upon that pretty quickly. They had Christmas trees at Walmart in Columbia before October even had begun. So that's where it's happening every day, every year it's happening sooner. Like, it's, I think maybe 10 years from now, maybe it'll be July and they'll have the Christmas trees. And but anyway, so Moses and Yahshua also came out of Egypt. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 19 through 21, so it's kind of some of the same verses we just read, but to repeat it as a second witness. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of Yahweh appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. So, as you can see, Yahshua came out of Egypt. Now, of course, the prophet that said that, I think, was Hosea, or was it Habakkuk? It was, prophet started with an H. I can't remember which minor prophet it was, but there was a prophet that said, out of Egypt I've called my son. Context, it was referring to the Israelites coming out of Egypt, but we also know that there are many dual prophecies in Scripture, so what could apply there can also apply in the future. We know that the abomination of desolation prophecy has already occurred to a point, but is also going to occur again because of Antiochus Epiphanes IV, which was a very evil, wicked man. If you really want to know that story, Maccabees is a good book to read. Exodus chapter 2, verse 15. Again, that's back to Exodus again. Sorry, I know I'm making you guys jump all the way back and forth here, but sometimes it has to happen. You're going to be doing that anyway if you're following any of those, what do they call those little notes that have references? They'll bounce you back and forth too, so this is pretty common if you're studying. Anyway, in Exodus chapter 2, verse 15, it says, when Pharaoh heard about this matter, speaking of the time when Moses killed the one who was striking his fellow countrymen, he had killed them in defense of his fellow countrymen, and of course, when Pharaoh heard about this matter, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So Moses and Yahshua were both in Egypt, and they both came out of it. Both our master, Yahshua, and Moses gave up riches and glory for the riches of the riches and glory of the world for the riches of Yahweh. This is something that has always been one of my favorite parallels between the two. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23 through 26, again, that's Hebrews 11, verse 23 through 26, if anyone wants to turn there. Of course, you can always just listen to what I read. It says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called a son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of Elohim than to enjoy the temporary pleasure of sin, considering the reproach of Messiah greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 through 7, says this, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Messiah Yahshua, who, as he already existed in the form of Elohim, did not consider equality with Elohim as something to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a bondservant and being born in the likeness of men. So I'm going to pause in this verse because there's another thing in this verse that pops out to me. I'm not going to stray too far, but this verse also is always something shown me something else, and many people think that when Yahshua was here, he was both fully a mighty one, and at the same time fully, we've all heard the statement, he was the God-man. That's what the Christians will say. This seems to indicate, this verse always showed me that he was just a complete 100% man. When he came here, he had emptied himself completely of everything that he had in the heavens. If that was not the case, I don't see why he would have to ask the Father to glorify himself with the glory he had with the Father that was in the he had with the Father in the beginning. But I want to point this out because there's a good message in the fact that Yahshua was completely human as we are. It shows that even we, if he, who was also completely human, is our example, could overcome sin for his full life, we too, through Yahweh's Spirit, can also overcome everything that the world throws our way. I just wanted to point that out right here, because that's a verse that means a lot to me personally. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 says this, looking only at Yahshua, the originator and perfecter of the faith, who for the joy set before him endured the stake, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of Elohim. We just read that in the Bible study earlier. But all these verses are showing us that both Moses and Yahshua did not hold on to any riches or glory, but first and foremost put forth the will of Yahweh in their lives. And for that, they both were rewarded. Now, a lot of people think Moses was, it was still beautiful, probably, to look upon the promised land. I mean, it's probably a blessing that Yahweh even let him do that for what Moses did, but he still got to see it, which is better than nothing, honestly. When you consider that Aaron and Miriam did not even get to see the promised land for their disobediences and for their dying ahead of time, Moses got to see it, even though he did not get to enter it. It's still a blessing. Hopefully we all, in faith, like our master Yahshua and Moses, are willing to set aside the riches of the world, considering it nothing compared to the glory set before us, or we are going to have a hard walk in life. Romans 8:18 says this, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. So, another thing we need to consider is, you know, just like them, they're both examples. We need to remember that the things of this world are fleeting. They're going to be burned up. Nothing in this world is going to last. So, are we going to do Yahweh's will and focus on Him first and foremost, or are we going to be choked by thorns, to those who understand the reference? To those who don't understand the reference, I'm referring to the seeds, the sower who sowed the seeds. The thorns were the things of the world, and they choked the word's growth in those people. Another parallel between Yahshua and Moses that most people don't consider is that after being baptized, Moses was baptized in the Red Sea and Yahshua in the Jordan. They both fasted for 40 days in the wilderness. But that's also another thing they have in common. They were both baptized in a sense. Yahshua in Jordan and Moses in Red Sea. But in Exodus chapter 34, verse 28, says, so he was there with Yahweh for 40 days and 40 nights. He did not eat bread or drink water. And he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 9, if someone wants to turn there, it's again, that's Deuteronomy 9:9. When I went up to the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant which Yahweh made with you, then I remained on the mountain for 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. So we see Moses fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Two witnesses to that. Matthew chapter 4, verse 1 through 2, it says, again, if anyone wants to turn that, that's Matthew chapter 4, verse 1 through 2. Then Yahshua was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after he had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, then he became hungry. Now, this is also, I think, mentioned in Luke. I didn't put it in there, but pretty sure it's mentioned in Luke as well, right? But so that's the second witness, if anyone wants to double-check that. Just the first few chapters of Luke. So Yahshua and Moses both fasted for 40 days and nights, neither eating food or water, before they did the bulk of their ministry. Because honestly, 40 years is a long ministry for Moses. People think he did a lot of ministering before. He did a lot of ministering after that, I can guarantee you. 40 is the number of trials and testing in Scripture. Whenever the 40 days or years occurs in Scripture, it is usually in context connected to trials, testing, or a punishment for disobedience. Like when Israel was forced to wander for 40 years, a year for each day, the scouts were scouting the land of Canaan. Also, to those who want to fast biblically, this is just a note, a reminder, that a biblical fast is one without food or water. I know a lot of people out there, they think they're fasting when they're just drinking water and not eating anything. That's a water fast. That's not a real biblical fast. I had a friend who did that. He thought he was fasting. Also, it's not a really good idea to do that for a long period. I just want to put this out there because water washes away sodium in your body. If you don't get any electrolytes or sodium in your system and you water fast for too long, you can seriously damage your body. Both Yahshua and Moses also taught the law and the Torah of Yahweh to the people. In Exodus chapter 18, verse 16, it says, "When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between someone and his neighbor, and make known the statutes of Elohim and his laws." This is referring to the time when Jethro noticed that Moses was judging all the people by himself, and eventually came up with the idea of how to split that among thousands, captains of tens, thousands of fifties, because it was not good for one person to be judging. Could you imagine just for a moment how hard it would have been for one person to judge 6 million people, around 6 million people? That would have been, I think my job's hard. Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 says, "Do not presume that I come to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill." We all know that verse. Now, Yahshua and Moses both came and taught the law of Yahweh. When Yahshua said, "I did not come to abolish the law, but fulfill," he was saying that he came to fully preach the word. The word translated "fulfill" is the Strong's Greek word number 4137, plerau, which means to fill up, perfect, to fully preach, in essence, to establish. Yahshua came to establish his Father's law. Though both Moses and Yahshua preached Yahweh's law, Moses taught more on the letter of the law, and Yahshua the spirit of the law. This is not to say, however, Moses did not understand the spirit of the law. He certainly did. The people who he taught, however, would not have understood it. The people Moses taught were extremely stiff-necked, tempting Yahweh 10 times. In Numbers chapter 4, verse 20 through 23, it says, "So Yahweh said, I have forgiven them in accordance with your word. However, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of Yahweh. Certainly all the people who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land that I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who were disrespectful to me see it." So they didn't obviously understand the spiritual aspects because they didn't even understand the letter of the law. And that goes into Yahshua speaking to, it parallels, in my opinion, with Yahshua speaking to the Pharisee Nicodemus. When he spoke to Nicodemus, he said this in John chapter 3, verse 12, "If I told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things?" Even at that time, the people of Israel had still not gotten the idea of what the spiritual, the deeper aspects of the law was. And that goes back to what we were doing earlier in the Bible study, what we said earlier in the Bible study about the Pharisees neglecting the weightier matters of the law. They knew the letter of it to the letter, but they did not understand the spiritual. And here's a rhetorical question, honestly, I have to ask. How is it that the priests, the Sadducees, who knew, who did the offering, waving the offering, the wave sheaf offering on the day of first fruits, deny the resurrection when that was the very symbolic thing of the resurrection? So obviously they did not understand the spiritual implications of the law. If they had, they would not have denied the resurrection. Even the priests did not get that. I'm not saying that no one ever did. Obviously there were people throughout history who did understand the spirit. We find these people, but definitely in Hebrews 11, who did understand the spiritual aspects of the law, but those numbers are few and far between. I'll say that. If the stiff-necked people of Moses' day who saw all the miracles of Egypt experienced the distinction, the distinction between Israel, them and Egypt, because Yahweh did at the third plague make that distinction, witnessed Yahweh's love and mercy could not obey or even understand the letter of Yahweh's law, which is more physically applicable, how then could they understand the spiritual things of Yahweh's law, which are more heavenly applicable? It would have been like trying to feed a newborn baby a well-done steak when it can barely handle milk. Speaking of stiff-necked people, both Yahshua and Moses had to deal with this. And a lot of people don't notice that, know that Yahshua kind of got a little fed up with people, but he did. But I'm going to start with Moses first. Numbers 20, verse 2 through 4. Again, that's Numbers, verse 20 through 2, verse 2 through 4. I don't know. Stumbling over my words now. It says, there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled against Moses and Aaron. Then the people argued with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had perished when our brothers perished before Yahweh, why then have you brought Yahweh's assembly into this wilderness for us and our livestock to die here? In Numbers chapter 20, verse 7 through 11, then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron, assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it shall yield its water. So you shall bring water for them out of the rock and have the congregation and their livestock drink. So Moses took the staff from before Yahweh, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron summoned the assembly in front of the rock and said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth you out of this water out of this rock? Then Moses raised his hand and struck the rock twice with his staff, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their livestock drank. Now, we all know that we just read, Yahweh told Moses to speak to the rock. Now, this was the waters of Meribah, to clarify. This is where Moses' disobedience cost him the entering into the promised land because of this one disobedience. And I think everyone here would agree that this rock that followed them in the wilderness was Messiah. So, symbolically, does that mean he struck Messiah instead of speaking to him? It's not good. But seriously, this is not, I mean, to some people this might seem like a small infraction, not to Yahweh. No. I mean, even Uzziah's breach seemed like a small thing to me when I read it, but not to Yahweh. I mean, he had good intentions, but we all know the highway to hell is paved with good intentions. That's an old, old phrase, and it's never been truer. Got a lot of people in the world who think, oh, if I just do good, I'll be okay. First of all, how do you define good? What's the standard for that? But, you know, good intentions, I mean, yeah, a lot of people have good intentions, but oftentimes good intentions lead to bad results. So, but for Moses not obeying Yahweh's command and for striking the rock instead of speaking to it, Yahshua, that's why he was punished. But Yahshua, too, had to deal with the stiff-necked people that frustrated him. In Matthew 17:17, again, that's Matthew 17:17. Before I read this, I'm going to go ahead and say this. A lot of people think that Yahshua was a tolerant. He was probably the most intolerant person on the planet towards sin. He hated sin. So most people think, well, he loved the world so much. Look at it this way. You can also look at it this way. Yahweh so hated sin that he sent his son to die for us. So he loved us, but he also hated the sin. Most people don't think of that. It's the sin that separated us, so that's what had to be dealt with. So a lot of people don't think that way. They think, well, he loves us. He also hates sin. So it says, and Yahshua answered and said, you unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring him here to me. He didn't sound too happy in that to me. He sounded pretty upset. But even when Yahshua was angry here, this is a righteous indignation, he didn't take it to the level that Moses did. He didn't get angry to the point of sin. He controlled his anger, but he still made clear that he was frustrated here. I think I can hear it just reading it. I can hear his frustration. I don't know about any of you, but I personally can hear this frustration. As we can see, both had to endure stiff-necked, unbelieving people that frustrated both of them. Of course, Yeshua never let his frustration cause him to sin. Another thing that shows Yeshua as the prophet like Moses is the similar miracles that they performed. And they performed a lot of similar miracles, but I'm just going to list a few. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 6 through 9, again, that's Exodus chapter 4, 6 through 9. Says, Yahweh furthermore said to him, "Now put your hand inside the fold of your robe." So he put his hand inside the fold, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, like snow. Then he said, "Put your hand inside the fold of your robe again." So he put his hand into the fold again, and when he took it out of the fold, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. So if they will not believe you, nor pay attention to the evidence of the first sign, they may believe the evidence of the last sign. But if they will not believe even these two signs, nor pay attention to what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground, and the water which you take from the Nile will turn into blood on the dry ground. One of the miracles Moses was to show to the Israelites was the healing of leprosy, which Yahshua also did. Now, I'm not going to say this is something exclusive to Yahshua and Moses, because we read about Elisha healing Naaman of his leprosy. But I think this is still a good point to make, because they both did it. So, in Matthew chapter 8, verse 1 through 3, when Yahshua came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him, and a man with leprosy came to him and bowed down before him, and said, "Master, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Yeshua reached out with his hand and touched him, saying, "I am willing, be cleansed." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Moses also turned water to blood. And we just read that to a point, but I'm just going to read the other account when he turns the entire Nile to blood, not just a part of it. So in Exodus chapter 7, verse 19, again, that's Exodus chapter 7, verse 19, it says, "Then Yahweh said to Moses, 'Say to Aaron, take your staff and extend your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, over their streams, over their pools, and over all their reservoirs of water, so that they may become blood. And there will be blood through all the land of Egypt, both in containers of wood and in containers of stone.'" This miracle, Yahshua also performed in a different manner. Did you know that wine is called the blood of the vine in Hebrew cultures? So when Yahshua turned water to wine, he turned water into the blood of the vine. He turned water to blood, symbolically. So in John chapter 2, verse 1 through 10, and that's John chapter 2, 1 through 10, it says, "On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Yahshua was there. And both Yahshua and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Yahshua said to him, 'They have no wine.' And Yahshua said to her, 'What business do you have with me, woman? My hour has not yet come.' His mother said to the servants, 'Whatever he tells you, do it.' Now there were 6 stone water pots standing there for Jewish custom of purification, containing 2 or 3 measures each. Yahshua said to them, 'Fill the water pots with water.' So they filled them up to the brim, and he said to them, 'Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter.' And they took it to him. Now when the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the groom and said to him, 'Every man serves the good wine first. Then when the guests are drunk, he then serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now.'" Yahshua here turned water to wine, or to the blood of the vine. On a side note, I would have loved to have seen the face of the head waiter or the master of the house when he realized the wine came out of the pots used for purifying. I'm sure that was not a very happy man at that point, because this was the pots they were using for all their ritual cleansings at the time. I'm sure a couple of veins in his head probably popped when he realized that. Another parallel between Yahshua and Moses is the bronze serpent. This is going to be my final parallel between the two, because this, I believe, is the most important parallel, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think, but in my opinion, between Moses and Yahshua. In Numbers chapter 21, verse 4 through 9, again, that's Numbers chapter 21, verse 4 through 9, It says, then they set out from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom. And the people became impatient because of the journey. So the people spoke against Elohim and Moses. Why have you brought us up from Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and we are disgusted with this miserable food. Yeah, we didn't like that. Then Yahweh sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people so that many people of Israel died. So the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned because we have spoken against Yahweh and against you. Intercede with Yahweh that he will remove the serpents from us. And Moses interceded for the people. Then Yahweh said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and put it on a flagpole, or some just say a rod. I mean, different translations will read different things on that. And it shall come about that everyone who is bitten and looks at it will live. So Moses made a bronze serpent and put it on a flagpole, and it came about that if a serpent bit someone and he looked upon the bronze serpent, he lived. Yahshua said in John 3:14 that he must be lifted up like this serpent. He said in John 3:14, and just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. This is referring to his impalement upon the stake. Just like that bronze serpent was most likely nailed to that pole, Yahshua was nailed to a pole. Just like the bronze serpent, Yahshua was lifted up on a stake, and just like the bronze serpent, anyone who obeyed Yahweh and believed his promise of healing that would look on and trust that the bronze serpent would heal them, so too does looking on and believing in Yahshua that screwed me up. I'm so sorry. So anyone who looks upon this, it's the same concept. Those who looked upon the serpent trusted Yahweh that it would heal them. In the same way, when we look upon Yahshua's, what he did for us, that act saves us as well. That's the justification. But that doesn't neglect the need for obedience afterwards. People think that's it. No, you have to keep obeying. Do you really think the people who just got bit by fiery serpents that looked upon that serpent to be healed are going to go right back to doing the same thing they did? I'm pretty sure they had a pretty bad experience. I don't think they want to do that again. So that being said, those who do not put the work of trusting in and looking upon Yahshua will end up like those who did not trust Yahweh and look on the serpent. They died, and not only did they die, but they died in rebellion and sin. You don't want to end up like that. As we read earlier, we must hear the prophet like Moses. The word Shema, translated as hear, means to actively hear or to act upon. What we hear in essence to obey. Those who don't obey Yahshua but deliberately continue in defiance will find themselves falling into the hands of the living Elohim, which is a terrifying ordeal. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 26 through 31, it says, if we go on sinning willfully, after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a terrifying expectation of judgment and fury of a fire which will consume the adversaries. Anyone who has ignored the law of Moses is put to death without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much more severe punishment do you think he will deserve, who has trampled underfoot the Son of Yah, and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified, and has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, and again Yahweh will judge his people. It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living El. My hope is that this message has shown that Yahshua is the prophet like Moses, and he is the one we must hear, the one we must shema. Yahweh bless you all.